From Cheyenne to Cody, from Gillette to Rock Springs, this is Let's Talk Wyoming, your weekly double dose of Wyoming politics. Because politics may be complicated, but we're here to break it down and help you make sense of it all. I'm Amy Edmonds, a former legislator from Cheyenne. Thanks for being here. Everybody, welcome back. This is Let's Talk Wyoming. I'm Amy Edmonds, former legislator. Thank you so much for joining. So we are almost at the end, folks. Legislature is so close, a second to the last week. They should be done at the end of next week. And I don't know about you, but I am thrilled. For those of us who live in Cheyenne, I think the legislative session is a little bit like Frontier Days. We're always so excited when it begins. It's always a big deal. I mean, we're the capital city here in Wyoming. It's great to have folks come and see our beautiful capital and the places that are in our backyard. But, you know, after a week or so, we're kind of sick of it. We're kind of, in the case of Cheyenne Frontier Days, the traffic, the people, and in the case of the legislature, just the ongoing busyness and drama of the legislature. So if you're like me, I'm so ready for them all to pack up and head back to from whence they come inside Wyoming sooner than later. And we're almost there. So this is the second to the last week. It was a very busy week. Of course, we are now on the, you know, the final stretch where bills are beginning to die. Today, I am recording this on Thursday, February 27th. Today is the last day for bills to be reported out of committee in the opposite chambers. So any House bills that are still over in the Senate committees, any Senate files that are over in the House committees, if they did not get heard and were not voted out, they're dead. That's today. Tomorrow is the last day of Committee of the Whole, which is, of course, the first time that bills are debated in the chamber, in each of the chambers by everyone in the body. And tomorrow will be the last day. Of that, the legislature, both the House and the Senate, should be going kind of late these next few days. That's typically how it happens, although I will tell you that may not be how it's going to happen. This has been one of the most up, down, and every direction sessions I think I've ever seen. There's just been a lot of drama. And to punctuate that, this week we had huge drama, folks, huge drama. So yesterday, Wednesday, the 26th of February, we first had the dropping of the court case that had been filed by the teachers union regarding our public education system. That case, we've all been waiting for it essentially to come down. This is the Wyoming Education Association versus the state of Wyoming in Wyoming in Laramie County District Court. So that case did just drop. And Wyoming, the state of Wyoming did not win. The Education Association most assuredly won. This is about, it's about a whole bunch of stuff. I'm not going to go specifically into all of it. I have not made it through all of the 186 page document. I've read some of the summary. I've talked to a couple lawyers who've read the whole thing. This is really about how Wyoming funds their schools. That's what they're all always about. For those of you who may not know, Wyoming has numerous public education cases known colloquially as the Campbell County cases. It all started with the Washakie case, but then Campbell County cases about how we fund our public education. And I think this one just continues in the same vein that we fund them first, we fund them the most, and we never stop funding them. And that's essentially what this is. It's a huge win for the teachers union, the WEA. And so we'll have more on that later when I have a chance to actually go through all of it. But that was yesterday. So midday yesterday, that dropped. Big deal, because this will affect the money that the state has, the way tax dollars are spent, and how much of those tax dollars have to be spent in education. It's also a big deal because we're beginning the process in Wyoming of what's called recalibration. This is based around these court cases in the past, where we have to recalibrate the funding model. And that funding model is the way in which we we comply with the court's rulings on how we have to fund education. And so that process is beginning. So this case basically throws down yet another gauntlet to the state and to those legislators. If there was any thought process that they were going to pull away from adequate funding or pull away from the constant, you know, cost of living adjustments, it's not going to happen. You know, state retirees, pensioners, you know, those folks, they're going to get to the back of the bus. They're not going to get the money, but the public education system is going to come first because they win these cases. They have the teachers union. They fight it. They win it. And so everybody else is going to come last. The school systems will come first. And that's essentially it. We'll have more on that later. But that was yesterday afternoon. Then the huge bombshell, the second bombshell yesterday, was the Senate dropping a press release saying they weren't going to pass the supplemental budget. The supplemental budget is officially dead. For those who may not know, we pass a budget every 2 years, but the year in between, so we're in the middle of a two-year budget right now, but that second year, or the middle year, the governor always puts in a supplemental budget. Now, when I served, supplemental budgets could be pretty bloated. And we're just another vehicle for kind of growing government and spending more money. I mean, this budget, Governor Gordon's one was pretty sparse. I mean, not as big as we've seen in the past. I think the thing about this budget that most people were really interested or looking at was its focus on, you know, emergencies, particularly funding for firefighting. You know, last year we had one of the worst fire seasons we've seen in a long time. I think we all remember it well, and I think we're all deeply concerned. I mean, here in Laramie County, we're in February. We have had little to no moisture the entire winter. I know we get a lot of moisture March, April, and May, and I pray that truly happens. But I think everybody is bracing for another horrific fire season. And the supplemental budget was to put some of those monies back in there. Otherwise, I think a lot of the stuff in the budget was more of a want than a need, because again, the legislature will be back in a year. So the Senate decided to just say, you know what, we don't want the budget. Now, I will read you, the Cowboy State Daily had a really good article. I will read you some of from the press release that the Senate leadership released. Basically, they concluded that now's not the time to increase spending needlessly. Senate President Beau Biteman had this to say. With all the major emergency contingencies taken care of, and I'll talk a little bit more about that, there's, and this is again, Biteman, there's no reason why after hearing from our members for a couple weeks, the current budget we're under is a good budget. We're covering the state adequately, Biteman said. Both chambers of the Wyoming legislature are working hard to deliver property tax relief, and with that comes serious considerations on what we can afford and how, Biteman says in a statement. Quote, as fiscal conservatives, we know that spending hundreds of millions of dollars while debating massive tax cuts is not the conservative thing to do. The Senate determined that we need to hold off on the budget until we know what the impact of historic property tax cuts and the successful right-sizing of the federal bureaucracy by the new administration, unquote. I mean, music to my ears as a fiscal conservative. I can see this. I can understand it. To a certain extent, I have some caveats about this, and it's more just about the timing and not the act itself. I think a lot of these supplemental budgets we've seen in the decades, were a lot of wants versus needs, things that could have definitely held. Now he says in the statement, with all the major emergency contingencies taken care of, what he means there is that the Senate has been offloading some of these budget amounts into standalone bills. So bills that have catch titles that they can use to put money into them specifically for these things. They've been doing that for like about a week. And I think some people were beginning to notice and were wondering if something like this wasn't going to happen because it was odd. The House, I think, caught on about a day ago because yesterday they did start offloading some things during the day. But from what I have heard from folks, they had no idea this was actually coming. They were starting to do some of it because they might have been wondering, but they did not know. And it was, you know, it's a big deal. This is historic. It's the first time that the legislature has not passed a supplemental budget. So that's a big deal. But I, you know, I understand completely the need for it in the sense that, and you know, I talked about this last week. you cannot be passing massive tax cuts and not expect a correlating decrease in government spending, because it doesn't work to do it any other way, right? Because government depends upon, government doesn't exist except for taxpayer funds, the money we agree to send in to build the systems and infrastructure that we want and the services that we believe we need. And so when you cut those taxes, when you cut that source, you have to subsequently cut government spending. And I think this is, in some ways, an elegant solution. I mean, in debating, in the Senate's position on the property tax debate discussion has always been no backfill. So in doing and saying that, they're essentially saying to our counties, you're going to have to do with less, right? Because we're going to cut this and you're going to get less. It's only right that the state level government says, guess what, we're going to do with less. I mean, we just are. So it's elegant in a way. The timing is what I'm not going to say that I question it, because, you know, politics is politics. You can rail against it, but you're never going to stop it, and it's a reality. And the politics in this country has gotten far more aggressive and confrontational, and we're seeing it right here in Wyoming. Obviously, this desire to talk about being, you know, fiscal conservatives is happening like a week and a half before the end of the session. So the budget had been, you know, went through the whole budget process, the supplemental budget, there were hearings, there was a lot of time and energy and taxpayer dollars spent in the development of the budget and all that stuff. And then this decision was made. Now, in that I see obviously some politics being played. I mean, clearly there was politics that was being played. But regardless of that, they came to what I think is a fairly good conclusion in the end. And so here we are. Other than, you know, the governor came out this morning with a really good statement, right? I thought last night when I saw this, I thought, okay, well, this is the opportunity for Mark Gordon. He really can do his, you know, disappointed dad thing and be like, hey guys, what are we up to? And he came out with that. I think he came out with that. Let me read you. It's real quick. Let me read you his statement. It says, since taking office, I have submitted balanced budgets to the legislature that are carefully analyzed, well vetted, and reflect what I consider a common sense view of what's best for the people of Wyoming. I opened this session by explaining that this supplemental budget was focused on emergencies and unanticipated expenses. Unfortunately, this legislature has overlooked emergencies and ignored unanticipated expenses in a quest for political talking points. This is what occurs in a no-compromise environment. I would hope that our legislators have their constituents' best interests in mind, and I remain optimistic that they will refocus their attention to address the most important issues facing Wyoming at this time. These would certainly include fire suppression and recovery, funding the property tax relief program, and addressing inflation in school funding. It is hard to raise a calf or drill a well on rhetoric alone. And, you know, there's a nice little shot across the bow on the politics being played there with that last sentence. And he's not wrong to a certain extent. He is not wrong. There's a lot of politics being played. And there's a lot of outside interest being played in all of this. I think everybody is beginning to, or at least has to realize, is happening and is of concern. I think it's a huge concern. We should all recognize it's a problem. These outside folks, you know, coming in, you've probably been getting text messages. You most likely got a statewide mailer. This is a real issue, and it is part of the politics that are being played here. It's a lot of money being dumped into the state, and all of us citizens should be concerned, because that's actually not a conservative principle, to have all this outside influence. States, and I mean, I'm a strong supporter of states' rights. We're a sovereign state. We have the right to make these choices, and all this outside pressure is not good for the process at all. And so I think the governor's statement was just talking about that. In terms of the overall savings, though, we have to recognize, or at least, I wanted to talk about this, that even though the supplemental budget is gone, everything inside that budget isn't gone. So the budget, the whole budget itself and its amount is not what was saved, because they're spending money in other vehicles, right? Other vessels, as I said earlier. What they've done is they've offloaded the same amounts for certain things. And one of them was the one I think that is the most critical and probably the only thing that I would have been supportive of, which is the fire suppression funds. Those dollars are really important. The governor spent through all of his funds that he's allowed to spend through last year, like literally really fast. And then he spent through all of his spending authority to borrow from other accounts. He went through all of that. I mean, I think we all remember. I mean, that those fires were horrific. They raged for weeks. And there were multiple ones. And they burned a lot. They did a lot of damage. And I think we're all bracing for what we know could potentially be another really bad fire season. So those dollars, and as President Bo Biden said, all major emergency contingencies have been taken care of. Those have been replenished in other bills, and so they'll finish through the process. So right now, what we're going to see, I mean, the budget's off the table. That did take away, I think, a major negotiating piece that the Freedom Caucus had over on the House side against the Senate, and they don't have that now. That's gone since the Senate has done this. And I do think that that's caused, you know, like I said, a lot of consternation. Although in some of the press reports I saw, Representative John Baer, who's sort of part of the mouthpiece for the Freedom Caucus, said that he was, you know, actually glad to see it. In a sense, I think that proves the point, because he's never glad to see anything that isn't his idea, ever. So I think that proves the point that the Senate made a really masterful political move, because they just stepped even further right than John Baer, which is hard to do. And they did it fiscally. Now, if you're listening to this and you're, you know, wherever you are in Wyoming, you might be saying to yourself, yeah, but to what end? I mean, are we all going to be pawns? Are our communities and the things that we need, are we going to be pawns to this political process? For right now, unfortunately, I think the answer is yes. I don't necessarily like having to say that, but I think the answer is yes. There's a lot of politics being played in Wyoming. The Cowboy State Daily had a really good piece from Leo Wolfson from yesterday with a headline, Out-of-State Group Texting Residents to Influence Wyoming Legislature. And that's, you know, that's, it's a great piece to show you the pressure that's being put on everyone, because these groups, and this one is about Young Americans for Liberty. It's an Austin, Texas-based libertarian group. They're the ones who, the wing of their political wing, a group called Make Liberty Win, spent a ton of money in Wyoming in this last August primary to get folks unelected and to elect Freedom Caucus members. They're still here. They're actively engaged. They're sending text messages out. They're sending statewide mailer out. You know, some of the messages, here's some of the headlines, here's some of the text in messages. Lawmakers in Cheyenne just gutted the property tax relief bill to keep taxes high and spending unchecked, reads a message. Here's another. This is a betrayal of Wyoming taxpayers. It's time to demand they pass real property tax relief. And you might wonder, why are these groups here and spending money in Wyoming? And I'll tell you, I mean, here's my theory about it. Well, here's a couple of things. Number one, obviously, these national groups have specific agendas, and they want to succeed in those agendas. I think a lot of them, like the Freedom Caucus itself, the National Freedom Caucus, which has now turned away from the Congress and has turned outward into all of the states and has been trying to, you know, get their hooks into states and then get folks elected. Wyoming's the first state where they've won a majority in one of the chambers. And so I think a lot of other groups like Young Americans for Liberty turned their eyes on Wyoming and said, aha, I see blood in the water. I think we can come here. The reason they do this, number one, I believe, is because Congress is lost. I think they all know that they're the chances. I mean, we have not had a president, and we do not have a president now who really wants to cut spending overall. And I think these groups think, well, we'll go out to the states, because number two, they need wins to keep their donors happy. So they have to find places where they can have wins, and those wins will include, in state government, it's just more bang for your buck doing it in the state. I mean, in Congress, it's hard. And I'm not saying that President Trump doesn't want to decrease the size, overall size of government, but what I'm saying is that really seeing the needle move in terms of our deficit, our federal deficit, would include taking on the big ones, not just, you know, DOGE and getting rid of some of employees. It would mean entitlements, and no one's been willing to take that on, because it's a big deal and it'll take a lot. And so I think a lot of these national groups have turned out into the states and are coming out here. And I think we won't be rid of them anytime soon, unfortunately. So what I would say is, if this frustrates you and if you're listening going, what do I do? Well, you need to vote. You need to be super skeptical of these texts that you get, any kind of political mailing or political stuff that you're receiving. You need to be really skeptical of it, particularly when it's talking about candidates or people that you might know. Be very skeptical. Look up and find out who these people are. I mean, most of them, you know, like Make a Liberty Wins and Young Americans for Liberty, we really don't have any way of knowing who's actually financially behind them because they hide behind different financial vessels that you don't get to know who their donors are. And so we don't know for sure. But obviously they're libertarians. They want little, low to no taxes. And we've seen nationally this whole move to get rid of property taxes. As a matter of fact, Governor DeSantis in Florida just came out with a whole statement about how he wants to get rid of property tax in Florida. I think congressionally there's been some bill filed to do a huge study project. And I actually think the study project's the right way to go. Like Wyoming, we're facing down this people's initiative where we're going to have to, the voters are going to be asked, and most voters don't vote against their own pocketbooks. So the 50% would likely pass. But the best way to do this would have been to do some kind of study and figure out how we're going to switch so that we can still have schools and roads and sewer and water and all the infrastructure that government comes that our tax dollars pay for, right? Like I mean, I've said this multiple times, I'm going to say it again. I want as low of property tax as I can possibly have. And you might be able to convince me that property tax is somehow immoral and that we should do other consumptive taxes. But what I know is that my home, my biggest investment in my life, is not going to be worth anything if the road that brings you to my house is not in good order. And if the schools that you want to, you know, that families that would potentially buy my house would put their children in are not in good order. And the, you know, the electricity that's brought out here isn't in good order. And those are things that I pay taxes for. And I'm happy to do so because they do affect my home. And I live outside in the county, people in the city even more so with all the other services they get, because I pay for my own trash pickup and that sort of thing. And obviously we have a well and we have our own septic, so we're not paying for sewer and others, but people in the cities, in the urban areas, even more so are affected by those things. And so it would be nice if we would take the time to figure out how we're going to switch, because what we don't want to do and what the problem with the backfill is simply put more things on the energy on the backs of our core legacy industries, that they're going to pay more taxes to pay for all the stuff we want. That I think is also, I think one could make a very good case for how immoral that is as well. And it's certainly, you know, we're getting services paid for by people who do not live here. That's why property tax uniquely tends to, I mean, I'm happy to listen to the argument and would discuss whether or not, you know, what the morality issue is with property tax. But there's definitely a movement happening nationally, and certainly here in Wyoming, we're affected by it, that somehow property taxes should be completely eliminated. I mean, we're going to face a potential 50%. So right now, let me just talk a little bit about Senate File 69, which is the property tax bill. That bill was conferenced today. They came up with an agreement between the two chambers at 25% cut. No backfill for the next 2 years. The first year, a full 25% for everyone. The second year, 25% only for people who have 8 months out of the year occupancy in their home, which would essentially get rid of all those folks in Jackson and other places who have second homes in Wyoming and the beautiful places in Wyoming, which I think is absolutely right. I mean, I just balk at the idea that we're giving, you know, our property tax refund programs right now, the vast majority of them are going to folks in Teton County. And I know everybody loves to kick Teton County, and hand up, I'm one of them. I see no reason why we should be giving people with $100 million homes property tax relief. So I think that's a good compromise. It sounds as though they have the votes in both chambers. Those should be voted on soon in the legislature late this afternoon. I'm recording this later in the afternoon on Thursday the 27th, so we'll see. If I see it pop up before I'm done recording, I'll let you know. What I do know is that, so that's the property tax. We're still waiting. That's the big bill that we've been waiting for. I also know that House Bill 199, the Education Savings Account, the scholarship program, some people call vouchers, that bill did have a conference this morning. And what they're conferencing on is the difference between the House and the Senate. The only major difference that they had to compromise, that they were having difficulty compromising. The House accepted the Senate's position to put more accountability into the bill. There was already testing put back in the bill. If you remember, the House passed a bill that I just couldn't completely get behind because it had no measures of accountability. And no, and again, as I've said, people who choose choice, who want school choice and who may choose something other than public education system are not somehow special, inherently special. We are all sinners. We're all fallen creatures, and we should put checks and balances. These are public funds. They should be made to have to account for their dollars just like we do in schools. And if you say we don't do it well enough in public schools, well, I probably agree with you. Doesn't change my mind on it. I would just say we should do better in making the schools more accountable for how they spend their funds. I don't disagree with that at all. There should be transparency, and we should know how the money's being spent. It is, after all, the public's money. So, but that all got put in the Senate. They accepted that on the House side. What got kind of sticky was the pre-K portion. Here's where, if I think I've said this before, but last year the legislature actually passed this. It was a means tested. It was not a universal system, so it means tested what families could qualify for it, and it had pre-K in it. Now, the Senate put pre-K, the House version that started the whole process had no pre-K. The Senate put the pre-K in, and the Senate put in universal pre-K. The House absolutely said they would never accept universal pre-K. As a matter of fact, the Freedom Caucus, I think as a sort of shot across the bow, put out a press release earlier this week while the negotiations were still happening saying we will never accept universal pre-K. So they've gotten it down to a means-tested pre-K. At a fairly narrow means-tested pre-K, and the House and Senate did agree in the conference committee. That went over to the House. There's some pretty good debate, but it did pass. So now that just needs to pass over in the Senate. The Senate will have to pass it, and I'm assuming they'll do that later in this afternoon, and then that bill will go on the governor's desk. So that's where that bill is. We have quite a few other, I think, fairly controversial bills. We've got a gun-free school zone bill that is on its way to the governor's desk. It's not a bill that I'm not as alarmed with the bill as I think some people are. Although I will say that as a strong Second Amendment supporter, someone who has I'm not going to say how many guns I have in my home. It's none of your business, but. I will say that, you know, with gun ownership comes responsibility. And what I just kind of struggle with is this idea that gun owners themselves are inherently equipped to handle live fire situations. I don't think the argument, when I listen to the debating of that bill personally, a lot of people try to make this argument about whether people who have concealed carry licenses or whether people who are strong Second Amendment are good people or not good people or law-abiding citizens. I don't really think that's the argument because they generally are. I mean, I agree with that wholeheartedly. But that's not the argument I would make. The argument I would make was, I mean, my husband is a very good person. Love him dearly. I think even he would admit, I know he would admit, and I admit fully, I'm also a gun carrier and a gun owner. I am not equipped for a live fire situation. If I was driving past a school and there was an active school shooter, I would in no way feel that I have the skill to take my gun out of wherever I have it in my vehicle and run charging into that building. I know that I don't, and I would be so fearful I would kill somebody I shouldn't. And so I think that's more of the issue. Like, it's a separation issue for me. Are we doing this to advance Second Amendment rights? And if we are, then I'm fine with it. Or are we doing it because we believe this is the vehicle to keep children safe in live fire situations? That's where I disagree. If we want to keep children safe from live fire situations, I agree as a deterrent, getting rid of school-free zones is a good idea. It's just like I agree that, you know, having concealed carry, having gun ownership as a normal everyday activity deters crime in this state. I believe that fully. So I think it's a deterrent, but it is not an active part of keeping children safe. The active part of that is actually having school officers, police officers who are skilled, who train every day, weekly, who have to constantly be using their weapon and training in it, and are trained on actual live fire, how to go in, sweep a room, sweep another room, find the bad guy, and not kill anybody else. That would be the active part of keeping our children safe, and we should do that. And I heard some debate on the floor about, like, you know, we've got retired people and we should just let retired military come in. They want to volunteer. I mean, I think if we have retired folks who want to come out of retirement and be hired and for liability reasons, then we should absolutely be doing that wherever we can to actively protect our children. But that's an active part of it. The inactive part is just the deterrent, which I agree. I mean, that's why I probably wouldn't have an issue with passing the bill, because it is a deterrent to not have a, wherever guns are not allowed, people are, I believe, less safe because it is a deterrent. Every bad guy, and I listened to some of the committee testimony, a lot of these folks who've done school shootings have said, I chose a school because I know there's less people, there's nobody in there with guns, so it's a soft target. But I think the people that want to make the argument that somehow somebody coming off the street is going to make kids safer, I don't think that's true. I just don't. I'm sorry, because I don't see it. I know if I went around my neighborhood and asked people, many of whom are gun owners, do you think you could just walk into a school in the middle of a live fire situation and save lives? And I think most of them would say, I'm not equipped to do that. So, and you know, listen, it's kudos to our officers who are. These men and women stand on that blue line and they are trained to do it. And God bless them for being there. And we should pay them well and we should have more of them. That's the active part of keeping our children safe. So that bill is out there. I believe it's headed to the governor's desk as well. What other bills did we want to talk about today? There's a couple of really good social conservative bills. As you know, I am a full conservative, social and fiscally conservative. I believe strongly in some of these bills. We've got a bill on protecting women's privacy. This is the, you know, quote unquote bathroom bill. It's about in our public spaces, bathrooms, particularly in our public schools. In our university, but also in our public buildings, for state employees and other places, would people who are not of one gender be allowed to go into the bathroom simply because they identify as that gender? There's two bills, a lot of games being played between these two bills. I was really disappointed to see this. I mean, I was super disappointed in Senator Dan Larson for, I think what I saw was a lot of games being played. He had a much weaker bill because his bill only dealt with K-12 and only with sporting events, not with any of the other things. You know, our kiddos go around the state for lots of non-sports activities where they spend the night in a hotel room, where they're in buildings, debate club, choir, you know, all the non things. Didn't cover any of those things. There didn't cover public buildings, so state employees, people who work day to day and are using a public restroom. Didn't cover the university. So it really was a weak bill. But because the other bill was a House bill, House Bill 72 by Representative Martha Lawley, the Senate sort of played games with her bill. There's a lot of that going on. The Senate is definitely in a stronger position than the House. And so they've been killing a lot of House. So if there's two policy bills, they kill the House one and claim the Senate one for victory. I don't like those kind of games, particularly because in this realm, it really is a weaker bill. The Senate bill is very weak. And I have no doubt the governor will probably sign it and declare some victory. But I'm going to be here to remind you week on end that it's not a victory, that we did not solve all the issues around those public spaces. And listen, I know for a fact that this is a huge issue for Wyoming voters. And I don't think Wyoming voters are that dumb. They're not going to fall for it. And they're going to recognize that this is not being solved. Now, House Bill 72 did pass. Senator Larson stripped out the K-12 part of it. So his bill was the only one that had it in. Again, that feels very much like playing a game. Like he wanted the full credit and didn't want another bill, which I think is just unfortunate, right? His bill over on the House side, when it was over there, the representative who sponsored House Bill 72, Martha Lawley, voted for his bill. But he did not afford the same courtesy to her, which I think is just about playing games, and I don't like it. I mean, I think it's just the wrong thing to do. Policy should matter. And Representative Lawley said on the House floor, you know, policy over personalities. And policy over politics. And I agree with that wholeheartedly. This whole discussion today could be policy over politics. Matter of fact, I may make the title of this podcast that, because I think it's a great one. Policy over politics, policy over personality. It's a really hollow victory when you have to pull someone else down to get your victory. I mean, you should have learned that when you were 10, 11 years old, but apparently Senator Larson didn't learn that. It's a hollow victory when you have to tear someone else down to try to get your victory. So that's unfortunate. House Bill 72 is still alive. It's been stripped. It passed through the Senate. It's got to go through conference because it was kind of ripped to shreds over on the Senate side. by, again, Senator Larson and Senator Taryn Nethercott. So we'll have to wait and see how that conference works and if the bill stays alive. But there's some other bills. There's an age verification bill, which is also Representative Martha Lawley's bill. So this is a good little bill. It's just a really smart bill about ensuring that we have, it's not going to be done by the state or anything like that. It's an outside entity, independent entity that does age verification on pornography sites. And the reason that you need to do this is because right now in Wyoming, your little kiddos can just stumble upon them doing a search in a search bar or going somewhere. As a matter of fact, there are algorithms that prey on little kids in certain little kids' sites. And this would stop that. In states where they've done this, it stops it like by 90-some percent because it requires an age verification that an 8-year-old would not be able to do and would not be able to produce the obvious documentation. Even a 14-year-old couldn't do it. So it's really smart. It's just a protection thing. That bill's languishing on the Committee of the Whole report, Senator Taryn Nethercott, another bill she's been playing games with. That's just sitting there. I suspect the bill's going to be killed by her. So this week is going to be, like I said, the last four Committee of the Whole work. That'll be done tomorrow. Next week, folks, we're going to be in the midst of, oh my gosh, veto overrides, right? If the governor does indeed veto. My predicted plot is that we'll see vetoes, but I could be wrong. So, and this House will stay in for as long as possible. I know they'll stay in. They want to get like the property tax thing done. They want to get some others done because they have to stay in. Because the governor has only 3 days after the bill's passed to sign or veto while they're in session. So they're going to try to get as many of these bills done by tomorrow as possible so that they can stay in session. But potentially they're supposed to be out, I think, by Thursday or Friday. We'll wait and see. But even then, there might be vetoes coming down the line. So next week will be all about veto overrides. It's going to be exciting. A lot of things happening, and exciting because they're all going to leave. Like I said at the beginning, cannot wait. Love you all. So glad you're leaving my hometown and heading back to wherever you're from in Wyoming. That's great. And then we'll have a lot of time in the next few months to kind of go through. There was just a huge amount of like election integrity bills. There's a bunch of bills about masking and sort of still the vespers of COVID. Some people haven't gotten over all that COVID stuff and are angry about it. So there were those bills. I will do quite a few podcasts in the future, just kind of theming those, telling you the disposition of all the bills and what happened to them, where they're at, what survived, what didn't, what got vetoed, what got overrode. But for next week, veto overrides is going to be the theme. I think we're going to see some. It'll be the final stuff in the legislature. So until then, we're going to have a gorgeous weekend here in Cheyenne this weekend. I hope you all get out and get lots of wonderful sunshine and enjoy it. I would like to see more moisture, but we'll have to wait and see. Wyoming, great to talk to you. Until next week, have a wonderful weekend, everybody.